Hi everyone, hope you've had a great Easter break. I'm Tony Chen and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. It's now been a month since the traffic light system in Norway has been decided, and the downstream impacts have been talked about in so many different channels. It's no secret that the traffic light system is one of the most important regulatory frameworks across all of aquaculture. Originally introduced in 2015, it's been at the forefront of sea lice management around the world, and the regulation has been one of the most important pieces of legislature that determines how quickly the industry is able to grow in Norway. Today, I wanted to take a look at a few details around the decision and the data coming out of it. We're going to look into the data behind what determined the current colors, what the impact will be, and how the industry is responding to the decision. Let's break down exactly what is going on here. If you are interested in the intersection between aquaculture, business, and environmental impact, there isn't a topic more at the forefront of these concerns than sea lice. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. As a quick overview of the regulation, Norway is divided the country into 13 different regions, and each of these regions are given a red, yellow, or green light that determines how much growth is allowed in that region. Red regions have to reduce their biomass by 6%, yellow regions are given zero growth, and green regions are allowed a 6% increase. As long as there are more green zones than red, the country as a whole will produce more salmon. On March 6 of this year, the Fisheries Minister of Norway, Cicely Myrseth, released the updated traffic lights, and they resulted in the most strict regulations yet that will impact the regions for the next 2 years. This year, two zones were deemed red, the same as the last iteration. Five were marked as yellow, and six were marked as green. The biggest change has been in the number of yellow zones that increased from 3 to 5. Looking at the whole country, this means that the industry will continue to grow, but at a rate that is less than the last grounds of the traffic light designations. When you break it down into each particular region, however, the impact is felt very differently. For a region like Production Area 4, this is the third consecutive red light designation, and in total creates 18% total reduction for the sites that operate in the area since the traffic lights have been turned on. While all companies are affected, the larger companies that are publicly traded like Mowi operate in both yellow, red, and green regions, but they own sites across the country, meaning that even for the areas that they're in the red, they could still take advantage of growth being offered in other regions. Smaller, family-owned farms are the ones that are impacted the most. Within the regions of 3, 4, and 5, on the southern west coast of Norway, there are numerous companies that are third and second generation farmers that only own sites in these limited regions. An 18% decrease in their company's production volume is quite dramatic, and the uncertainty it brings forces many of these businesses to question their investment strategies moving forward. I've spoken to a few farmers in these areas, and many have expressed how the news of the new traffic light system seems to be like a slap in the face. Many sources have spoken out about how they feel that the ruling seems more politically driven than a reflection of the challenges and realities of what is happening on the farms. Because of this, I wanted to take a look into the details of the regulation and break down some of the arguments on both sides. To start with the regulation, it's important to understand the goals behind how these decisions were made. While many people that I've spoken to seem to think traffic lights are unpredictable, I believe that the data shows that the government is following a consistent pattern. Back in 2015, the traffic light system was developed to manage the relationship between salmon farms, the sea lice they produce, and how that lice transfers to young wild salmon smolts that are migrating out from freshwater rivers into the open ocean. The idea was simple. If more lice was discovered on wild salmon, then those regions would be required to reduce their biomass, which should, in theory, lessen the chance that wild salmon will encounter lice on their journey out to the open ocean. And to measure the impact, the regulation uses a couple of reports that are produced each year by the Institute of Marine Research in Bergen. The first report is the results from spring sampling of wild salmon and the number of sea lice found on each of those samples. The Institute uses a combination of trawling boats and fish traps during specific weeks of springtime to capture wild salmon, And that collection of data is used to measure the impact of sea lice on wild fish. The preliminary results are typically published in the summer, with a final report in the fall. The second report takes the data from these samples and models the impact on the entire production area. Using a combination of hydrodynamic models and probability sampling, scientists attempt to simulate the impact of sea lice on wild salmon in these regions. Since the samples are limited and prone to a little bit of randomness, this model attempts to use the collected data and scale it up to address the lower number of samples and variability in the migration patterns of the wild fish. This report is published in the fall time. And from my analysis, the number generated from these two reports show a direct correlation with the decisions that have been made by the government. The last three designations have all followed the same pattern. If the mortality exposure goes above 30%, it's pretty clear that the region will get a worse traffic-like designation in the next iteration. To me, this means that once the samples are reported in the summer, the industry should have a pretty idea of what's going to be coming. So why are we seeing such a strong response now? Well, I believe that in part has to do with the goals of the regulation and how they don't necessarily align with the outcomes. The goal, I believe, is to use the threat of reductions to motivate all the farmers in a production region to improve their practices and manage sea lice more effectively. The hope is that once they did, these regions would have proven to be able to limit the impact of their farms on wild salmon, and the areas can grow again. And to the industry, the feeling is that they have made these changes. Average sea lice numbers have decreased in red regions, more sea lice treatments are happening to maintain lower sea lice numbers, and many farmers have spent a ton of money investing in technology such as lasers, skirts, and semi-closed pens as a response to the traffic light over these last few years. But even with these changes, in many cases proven progress at the farms, it does seem like their efforts have fallen on deaf ears. Internally, the farms are seeing improvement, but when that impact gets connected to the wild salmon lice, the end result doesn't seem to change. Now, this is probably not the intended position that either side wanted to see happen. I assume that the ideal situation is that yes, some regions would see a decline, but over time, improvement would happen and the industry would adjust. Together, both the regulators and the farmers would see this industry continue to grow in a sustainable way. But so far, that unfortunately hasn't happened multiple times in a row, and the government is now in a really tough position. From the information that's been published about the decision, not much has been revealed or suggested on the side of what the government will do next. But the industry, on the other hand, has been extremely vocal. Here are a few cases that I have seen being made across seafood news outlets. One argument presented by an industry representative has been to call out the sampling methods and correlations used to make these decisions. Anytime you are working with wild populations of animals, you will have to work with models, samples, and small data sets. In this particular example, there are multiple steps of assumptions being used to estimate both the wild salmon populations and the impact that farms have on those populations. It's an incredibly difficult task to fully understand what is happening beneath the water, and extrapolations of small data sets isn't what businesses want to see. To hear that something as small as a bucket of fish can make financial impacts that result in millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for businesses, it's a hard pill to swallow. Another argument that I've seen made is exactly on this point of business impact. 14 mayors in the regions affected have already signed letters to delay the decrease in biomass until a later point in time, stating a fear of reduced jobs, investments, and innovations that is slated to occur. This logic is a direct result of the impact that the farms have in the regions that they operate. In my travels across the country, it's quite easy to see that the farming companies located in remote locations are the lifeblood of their rural communities. The schools, playgrounds, and sports facilities are all funded by the farms, and these farms often serve as the only economic activity in an area. The third argument that I've heard is one that comes from the farmers themselves, who feel that the government hasn't supported the industry in finding solutions to make the situation easier. As lice limits have become more strict, so have the number of options that farmers have had available to combat lice. With only a small toolbox and limited flexibility, many farmers argue that Their hands are tied as to what they can do, and their fish have suffered as a result. Furthermore, many feel that while the government believes that alternatives like land-based facilities or semi-closed systems are feasible, the regulatory structure isn't creating enough incentives to enable these seismic shifts in production of fish to happen. Investing in many of these risky solutions have dramatic costs associated with them, and it's not necessarily a simple decision for the farms. Now, I'm not bringing these arguments up to suggest that I have any idea what the outcome of this situation will be. I don't know much about Norwegian politics, and I'm not a historian on how these types of issues have been addressed in the past. That said, I'm very excited about the opportunity that science and data can contribute to solving the problem. From my perspective, there's a lot of issues that lie in the unknowns. What is the impact of lice? How will this impact our community? And what can I do to protect my business? And these questions can only be solved through increased knowledge and information. As the situation continues to evolve, I'm fairly confident that it will be very important for the world of aquaculture. I've said it before, but there really isn't a country or aquaculture industry that is as much riding on getting this right more than Norway. The 6% that is getting reduced in production area 4 is by itself larger than the entire aquaculture export market in many other countries. And the issue can have such a dramatic impact on so many people, businesses, and communities. As a result, in Norway, you simply just have a much larger collection of people and money that are all working to figure out what's the best path forward. And we'll continue to follow this story as it continues to develop, and we'll make sure to keep you informed. Hopefully you've learned something new today. If you're interested in keeping up with our episodes and care to subscribe, we launch new episodes each week. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.